Welcome back to episode 203. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. It looks like the immigration policy for France is working out well. What do you think about that?
I think it's going according to plan.
Yes, it is.
I mean, who would have thought that if you bring in teeming hundreds of thousands, millions of people from North Africa into France, you might have a problem. Especially males, right? Males.
They're mostly males. Now, my question is this. These people don't have much skills, do they? It's not like, you know, there's this technologic renaissance in France because of the skill set that
they can destroy things. They're very good at that.
But I mean, aren't most of these people there for asylum? I mean, as I understand, the majority of them, and now I could be wrong on this. Hard to get this statistic, but I believe the majority are there under the asylum provision. Well, why are they destroying the country if they're there on the basis of wanting it to use it as an asylum?
Well, Joe, you're being Eurocentric. Some cultures have a different way of expressing gratitude.
Oh, okay.
You'd be open to that. What the spark for this was the shooting of this Arab youth. He was fleeing the scene of a traffic stop. I think apparently his poor mother filmed it. Then apparently she called out for revolution because of it. There's a shooting. I think the officer involved in it was charged with manslaughter. I don't know what the details of that particular incident was, but this was the pretext, the spark, if you will, that caused the rioting that has spread to several cities and even into Belgium, from what I understand. That's another country. And what I understand, the Arabs are stealing or confiscating weaponry from the police and organizing militias, and from what I understand, waging a low-grade, mid-level civil war, and the black immigrants are just stealing or just looting. A library was burned, which is very fitting.
I know that kind of has like a racial tinge, but that's how the media is characterizing it, and I think what I would suspect is it just reflects sort of more the planning of the Arab youth in relation to how to behave in the streets. I think actually this is kind of like a color revolution. It's just what you're really looking at is, like, believe it or not, is a low level sort of color revolution. They're trying to affect the political nature of the country. I mean, it would be great if they could replace Macron. I mean, he's just an absolute Masonic cesspool, but can you imagine who they would bring into power at this point? So how will France respond? At the moment, there is, from what I can gather, there's a lot of resistance on the part of what can be called heritage French people, right? They don't like to see all this.
But there's still a strong sense of French identity.
Yeah, there's kind of a sense of, still there.
Ethnic identity.
They're angry and perplexed as to, well, where do these people come from? I mean, what is the...
That's right. No one asked them, right?
No. People didn't really go out and say, gee, we need to have a lot more Africans in this country. So this is, I would say, something which has been deliberately brought about by the EU commissioners, these unelected faceless bureaucrats who have created this immigration policy using asylum as one of its key opponents, which end up with millions of...
Juxtapose this to last month, there was that stabbing by a Syrian refugee, if I understand, in France. Of course, the French didn't riot over that. In fact, the media was filled. The BBC said apparently the authorities and people were worried this would spark a right-wing reaction and rioting. Of course, it didn't. But see, here's the difference is when something like this occurs, we hear about the injustice of the incident, like the police shooting, as some sort of justification for widespread rioting. But then when some insane refugee from Syria, I think, goes on a stabbing spree, kills and wounds many children, then that's that they're telling the natives not to get upset, to talk about peace and love. That's the two differences. So one, colored people, whether black or Arab, swarthy, whatever you want to call them, they riot over some they over some pretext, that's justified because it's just like, you know, like George Floyd. But if white people, like French people, get upset over the explosion of crime, the decline of social cohesion and social instability brought about by mass immigration, that's racist, and you can't express any discomfort or misgivings about that policy, lest you be a Nazi, even though you're French.
It's interesting. And really, you kind of wonder, where can the heritage European find the mental clarity to start making some changes politically? I would say that the first response to this would be, a political party, the creation of a political party that would demand the leaving from the EU and to regain control over immigration.
And also repatriation.
That of course goes with it.
Get out of here. That's it.
The correct response, what else can civilization require? The correct response is to incarcerate and then repatriate. That's it. Mm-hmm. What else can you do? You cannot integrate this group in any reasonable time frame into the French culture.
No.
So what you're really talking about is a destruction or an end of French culture in order to accommodate sort of the skill set of the immigrants. But this is, even if you wanted to do that, even if you were sort of like a starry-eyed multiculturalist and you're thinking, you know, eventually you'll get to the Brave New World, that won't work. It isn't possible because you'd have to ruin the economy. You'd have to have such a large welfare state and then restructure everything. And France is basically
broken. That's the plan. But the idea is that these immigrants are willing to do the things that the native French aren't willing to do, like burn down libraries, loot stores, and swell the welfare ranks, and don't provide any work or labor in return.
Pretty much. I mean, that's kind of what's happened. And so anyway, but
what's the unemployment rate? Like 75% among these people? I love that. Yeah. We need these people for the economy. They're all unemployed.
So it's just a rock and a hard place as far as like multiculturalism. There isn't the money. There isn't any, plan that is even remotely feasible. So this isn't going to work. So all you can do is incarcerate and repatriate. So how can you do that with the current political structure in France? Can't do it. So therefore, the nation is literally doomed. This is as a kind of a death sentence for France as much as the Ukrainian war is.
Well, isn't this what they've been saying for decades now as the plan? Whether it's Barbara Leonard Spector whether it's the Irish banker said that the nation states, he's dead now, it was a Goldman Sachs guy. He said that the era of the nation states are over. Barbara Leonard Spector said that Europeans have to get used to this.
Didn't she also say we're going to have to get used to like having Jews run the place?
Well, that's basically when you break down the social order and homogeneity of your culture, you inevitably succumb to Jewish control, which is, yes, that's because they're the only group that's allowed to maintain any cohesion or group identity and organize in that principle. Every other group is considered racist, or retrograde if they do that.
It's funny. But anyway, so the French riots are just spectacular. I have family members in France. Remember, I was in France like 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, the area where I was, which was the south of France, close to the Riviera, Montpellier, there was no tension whatsoever.
Isn't Marseille near there?
Marseille is up, to the west from there a bit. So,
but it's on the Mediterranean, right?
It is on the Mediterranean.
Mediterranean. That's where a lot of the rioting is now. I'm trying to look at
Marseille is a. And has been, historically a place where there's a lot of large Arab population. It has had that for 100 years.
It's a port city and all that stuff. Yeah,
port city, and it's directly adjacent to Africa, so it's been, just a multicultural city for a long time. But the rest of the French coastline along the Mediterranean is, historically, it's all French. Right. To say, you know, so it's just different in that area. And when I was traveling around, there's just no tension.
Well, there's always a blending because of the, you know, the French North Africa empire, you know, the,
But Marseille is riots
and all that. Yeah.
Now Marseille is having enormous riots right now. Yeah. It's, and of course, everywhere else in the country where there's large immigrant communities, they're all blowing up. So it's, you know, I mean, Macron, you know, I guess you were aware that, you know, he went to an Elton John concert.
Yes.
see how much concern he has for the average French, you know, kind of life, you know, and so the French people are, they're sitting there, the country is being ripped apart, and the political class, even if they don't admit it, are tacitly approving of it. So this is the condition. It's in France, it's in the Ukraine, obviously it's in England. I mean, this is the nation state and the individuals within it are all losing essence at this point. It's a death sentence for Europe.
Yeah, well, all non-citizens need to be, you know, suspected of, you know, being involved in these riots. All of them need to be returned. Because it can't be tolerated unless the country be ruined.
Yeah, in other words, whatever the fraction is of the immigrants who are participating in it is sort of irrelevant because the riots are so widespread and so destructive that it is you have to apply the consequences of the riots to all of the class that is producing it. Right, it doesn't matter if it's 10% or 30%. As a you know, an immigration philosophy, the asylum approach has failed.
Well, people will be concerned about what are the humanitarian concern? What the humanitarian issues evolving a civil war, which is inevitable. You know, a Campus Saints scenario. That what about those humanitarian concerns? If we're going to speculate what may happen if, well, what will happen if we know what will happen if nothing is done? Because that's part of the plan, and that's what the French people and, you know, the Europeans and the Americans need to realize about their political and the oligarchs that control them is that they're malevolent and they're seeking to, this is why U.S. immigration policy is in such a poor state because it's done intentionally to flood the country.
For the same reasons. I mean, our immigration is being done for the same reasons that EU immigration is being done. These are part of a plan to end sort of the European ethnicity, the different ethnicities, and to bring about a kind of third world population that's easy to control and easy to genocide. Because as we've discussed a million times, the poor you know, immigrants into France who think that they can, you know, riot, gain political control and then end up living in a, you know, workers' paradise. This is delusion. What they're heading for is a slave state and genocide. This is what will happen when the French ethnicity loses all of its power, has no influence whatsoever, and the oligarchs can basically call all of the shots. When that happens, the depopulation will really become accentuated. And so all of these people and their children are just, you know, basically damned to a kind of genocide. So this approach doesn't benefit anyone. The only of the three sides to this, Tim, of the French, the immigrants, and the oligarchs, the only group that is going to, you know, win out of this is the oligarchs.
Yeah, that's how it's set up.
Yeah, that's how it's set up.
And the French people right now, they're still a majority, if not a super majority, and they still have no representation or agency to affect government policy. Think that'll improve when they're a minority or just a plurality? No, of course not.
Yeah, of course not. You know, and of course, as a refuge for asylum seekers, it's just self-defeating because France will just be another third world cesspool. So there won't be any improvement for the immigrants if they travel from, you know, Tunisia to France, because France will just become Tunisia.
Yeah, and these, of course, these refugees, these asylum seekers are coming from countries that have been destabilized by NATO and the Western governments and the oligarchs. And so, they're victims again, this is that strategy where the victims of the oligarchs become janissaries for the oligarchs, and they're instrumentalized to further, you know, destabilize the target society.
Well, and also they defend the chaos. You know, they believe that there's some workers' paradise at the end of this heroic struggle. And at least that's the philosophy. That
or free Gucci bags.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, that's
tennis shoes and the mob.
The philosophy that they actually, you know, mention is, you know, is incorrect. It isn't ever going to be, you know, something that is an improvement in their lives, or obviously in the lives of, you know, the Heritage French. So they really need what has to happen for this situation to improve is for the French people to realize the secret. Mm-hmm. They have to realize it, that the EU is not set up, you know, with a lot of stupid people that just kind of made mistakes in what was otherwise a benevolent attempt at multicultural immigration policies. This is ludicrous. What they're experiencing is the result of a deliberate plan. What they're seeing in the streets today is what the EU commissioners had in mind when they opened the floodgates. They knew perfectly well, and any reasonable person would understand this. No one can think anything else, that when you bring in all of these people with really no skills that can contribute into the economy of the host country, and you bring them in such numbers that you will not have eventually riots and chaos. That's just,
of course,
through the policy. It's absolutely, you know, axiomatic. That's what's going to occur.
No, you have the Declaration of Human Rights, and just you just read them what the human rights are, and everyone just agree to it. Because a nation isn't a list of ideas on a piece of paper, and people are obligated to follow it if they, you know, if they enter the country. But you know, it's not accumulation of a millennia culture and experience and genetics that form a nation. No, it's just these ideas.
Right.
Yeah. So France is France, and France has several governments throughout the centuries. And it's always been France, you know, it's going back to what, the 8th or 9th, 800, 900 AD or something when it was founded.
Charlemagne. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So, I mean, but now, no, they're just going to overnight change it. And, you know, and of course, it has a history of expelling alien people and other cultures that were incompatible, like the Muslims in France. And that was Charles Martel, and you know, back in the eighth century. And then, you know, that's, you know, and it looks like it might have to be done again. Same thing with Spain when they kicked the Moors out. It just, like, you know, just none of this tolerance and integration and diversity, which is just an excuse to destroy the country. Diversity is not a strength, it's a weakness.
That's such an interesting idea. You know, when you think about what if the French sort of heritage individuals, which are not like a universal racial stock at this point.
No.
A lot of different ethnicities are involved in what can, I mean, first of all, they can speak French and they have sort of educational levels that can contribute to what is called France. There's the big majority of them would be descendants from certain sort of Gallic ethnic strands. Mm-hmm. But in any case, it's not just, you know, like a monotheistic block. It's a lot of people. Anyway, if that group said, you know, we're going to take control of the country and the political powers of France, and we're just going to round up the people that are wrecking the country and kick them out, can you imagine what that would be like? Imagine a policy of rounding up, you know, immigrants who have come into the country under fictional asylum laws, repealing all that stuff, and then saying, you know, you're going to have to leave. We're going to repatriate you. I mean, could you imagine the world response to that at this point? There'd be a media riot in every single Western nation.
Well, because those who control the media are ultimately behind the...
Exactly.
Okay? Exactly. And that, then you have to address another group that might have to be expelled.
Well, that's always the case.
You know? Because if you don't deal with that, These are all a result of that.
And, you know, so I think that's why the media would riot so violently.
Yes,
Because they would be afraid of the second wave of repatriation.
I mean, if you can't criticize George Soros not being called an anti-Semite, you know. There was also a Supreme Court ruling regarding affirmative action. I think two cases, one regarding Harvard, one UNC. The ruling, I read the headline, affirmative action declared unconstitutional, and said, well, no, that's not going to be that simple. And I was right. Turns out the ruling is really a big nothing burger if you actually read it. Schools, universities cannot say, right, you know, admit they're not admitting whites or Asians, but they can discriminate on other standards, like character evaluation, where there's the trap door for continued affirmative action, because character could be like, I'm a victim of systemic racism. I think Judge Roberts wrote, nothing prohibits universities from considering an applicant's discussion of how race affected the applicant's life, so long as that discussion is completely tied to a quality of character or unique ability that the particular applicant can contribute to the university. So right there, that's the same thing. It's the same thing out of, what was it, Bollinger 20 years ago, and also the what was it, the Bakke case back in the 1970s. It's there's apparently an interest in diversity for some reason, and that's the educational reason for, and this is just another way of lowering standards of reducing the amount of whites and Asian applicants to universities and increasing the amount of brown people, particularly blacks. I saw a study that if standards were kept across the board for all applicants at Harvard University, Harvard's black student population would drop from 15%, which is above the national average of the population, down to less than 1%. If standards. Way less than
1%. It would depend how the standards go, but if you use just a strict admission based on, you know, SAT results, mm-hmm. something like that, you'd really have very few African Americans, because the educational system hasn't produced those kinds of results, unfortunately. But it has created a kind of, let's call it an asylum seeker policy into the universities, because that's really what you're dealing with. Here you have affirmative action and there you have the asylum, but it's all the same thing, isn't it? I mean, you are de-racifying these institutions and nations for malevolent purposes. You know, this isn't occurring naturally, or, you know, it's not coming from the population wanting to have mm-hmm. broader cultural perspective and other cultures brought in. This is top down mind control, stuff to create a clump. I call it a clump of individuals that can't really resist, you know, because if you look at just take Harvard, you know, I mean, when you have that kind of diversity, the students can't even organize against the institution, even if it's failing them in terms of education, mm-hmm. which of course, you know, it really doesn't, because it brings in, you know, half of the students are these brilliant individuals, you know, they're going to go on and become the donor class in the future. And so this is what the school can hang its hat on in terms of their policies. But at the same time, 50% of the people in the school really shouldn't be there in terms of academic skill level. So what do you get? Well, I mean, you get, you know, basically it doesn't have any kind of centrifugal energy that could ever resist, you know, the malicious, kind of interests of the people who are organizing it, any more than France will be able to have an electoral solution to this, because you've got, you know, so many of the immigrants are now voting, and they will vote their interests. And then it combined with the individuals that are, you know, now in kind of in a woke consciousness matrix. And then they combine with those who are inside the special interests of the oligarchs, and they're the majority. So, you know, for France, I mean, it just looks to me like they're facing a future of the same nature that the Ukraine is. And the affirmative action repeal is, like, just as you say, and I'm glad you pointed that out. I mean, this is just, you know, a kind of, titular change. It isn't going to make any difference whatsoever. It reminds me of getting rid of Roe And then a year later, you know, you have like 2% fewer abortions. And even though you had all the, you know, the storm and fury, you know, when the thing was passed, and the actual mechanical, you know, application is going to end up with the same results, you know. And so affirmative action being repelled, but the university is still being permitted to have politically correct motivations for application admission. Well, what difference does it make?
They'll just change their standards. Like I heard the Z-Man was talking about, to just say instead of an SAT score, they'll say your ability to dunk a basketball. College. Yeah. And so basically it's affirmative action now, affirmative action tomorrow, affirmative action forever. And it's never going to change. Even if the demographics change, it's always going to be there, because it's one thing, it's anti-white, it's anti-Asian. But one thing is, it's also anti-competence, because we're seeing that now, is that we're not relying on testing and scholarship or grade scores to get into these universities. These universities, despite their elite status, there's no there anymore, because they're obviously compromising on the standards. I think Lori Lightfoot was hired by Harvard. So there you go. Brought in by another affirmative action, another Black lady to head Harvard. So she immediately hires an incompetent Black lady. That you're seeing a breakdown in how society functions, because they're not hiring on basis of competence and ability. They're hiring on basis of color, and that can have catastrophic consequences for a country, depending on the demographics. Of course, good example, South Africa did that, and the country collapsed within a couple of decades, because there simply aren't enough colored people in South Africa to provide the skills to maintain a modern nation state. Now, but then again, South Africa may be declining into complete anarchy and primitivism, but they're no longer racist. So that's what really matters. We all have our priorities. I sent you that email about that the pilot that successfully landed the plane without the benefit of landing gear. He didn't see a picture of him, but I heard him talking. He sounded like a boring, uninspiring 50-year-old white guy. But they're talking about, we need more diverse pilots. We need more Black female pilots, you know. And so if you have more Black female pilots and the plane crashes, it's okay, because that's the price you pay for not being racist. And that's the kind of choice we're given. Yeah.
Right. I mean, the thing is that what has not been done, and in fact is going on now as a kind of a macabre experiment, is no one's really studied what the effects of removing elite standards of efficiency from hiring, you know, what this does over a period of time. When merit is not the standard, mm-hmm. what are the long-term effects of that?
Well, planes crashing, grids collapsing, and power grids failing.
Yeah, and the nation.
But you get close to net zero carbon emissions.
There you go, right? We're heading that way. But my point is that, you know, they talk up their fantasy about the workers' paradise that's created out of all of these multicultural policies, but they never mention, well, you know, merit has this kind of efficiency, which leads to all of these good aspects of society and the economy, culture, and things. So when you take it out, well, shouldn't there be some kind of experimentation, perhaps, to see, well, what are the results going to be of this? Because here we remove merit as a standard. You know, we have been for the last 50 years steadily getting there. And the country, step by step, has gotten worse. America is basically dying from, you know, some perspectives. But this hasn't led to a renaissance in the inner city.
No.
This hasn't led to a demographic renaissance of like the African Americans, who are supposed to be the greatest benefit of these policies. If you look at the demographics, ever since the policies were implemented, you know, factors which were getting better, you know, things like out of wedlock births, educational level, you know, crime, violence, they're all getting better. Right?
Yeah, but that's not sexy. That takes patience. That takes generations. What they wanted a great leap forward. You get rid of Jim Crow, get rid of structural racism, if you will, get rid of these impediments, and overnight, Black people are going to be like white middle class people. And there was never any recognition that one of the reasons why Jim Crow or these independence existed was there were differences between black and white people. And there was a way to manage diversity, if you will. If you have diversity, you're going to have these restrictions. Otherwise, you're going to have problems. But according to the civil rights narrative, it was all evil white people. And it's guilty whites and victimized blacks. And you penalize the guilty and you give reparations to the victimized. That's the narrative. So this is just a logical consequence of the narrative we were given of the civil rights movement and white and black relations in the United States. But the problem is, again, the differences weren't just because of that. Differences are cultural, perhaps even genetic and temperament and ability. And to what a degree that's going to change, that takes multiple generations. You may never get equality in the conditions of freedom because groups are different. They have different preferences. Just simple. I remember years ago looking at a statistic at how much television East Asian American kids watch versus how much television Black kids watch. Black kids watched 8 times more television because the East Asian kids were studying. That's a preference. That's a cultural a preference how you want to live. But that's going to have consequences academically and economically and your life. Same thing with sexual patterns. If you live a dissolute, sexual life and you're not getting married and you're not taking your kids, that's going to have a profound impact on your offspring. Now, whether or not they're doing that because, they're ignorant and they need to be educated or just the way they are, they're just reverting back to, their native reproductive patterns in Africa. I don't know. I don't know. The bottom line is just you're still going to have differences. And no matter how much social engineering, how much money you spend, you're not going to change it overnight. You will get some improvement if you impose your standards. But that's white supremacy. A good example is white supremacy or white European standards imposed on Black Americans. And those Black Americans conformed to those standards. They did much better than those who didn't. But that's white supremacy now. You saw that when they said that punctuality and exactitude and perfectionism and being on time and being polite, these are all white things. Well, maybe they are. Maybe it's European. That's the culture. I believe it's a superior culture, and because it's my culture, I don't necessarily want to impose it on anybody, but I definitely want to be imposed on people in my country and my neighborhood where I live. But that's all. But if you do away with all those standards of behavior, you'll get civilizational collapse and poverty and despair and crime. That's what you get. And that's, you get out what you invest, and they think they can just get it for free. And they have an attitude is they have where they can just pick everything off trees. It just grows. That's what you have with the rioters and everything, whether it's in France or here in the United States, anywhere, they just think it just magically appears and they don't have to work for anything. And but, of course that's ingrained by promoting a culture of entitlement, a culture of victimhood, and of grievance, and where all your problems are someone else's fault, and that's what the regime supports for obvious reasons, not out of humanitarian concern, because they want an underclass that can be mobilized, and we saw that in 2020. We've seen it, how it's utilized.
So, well, I mean, we have to remember that the African American community in the United States was deliberately attacked. In other words, the Great Society programs were designed malevolently. There's just no question. And moreover, just look at the crack cocaine epidemic and the CIA's involvement in this. I mean, I've maintained that the CIA doesn't need to raise any money to fund the Contras. This is nonsense. The CIA has access to all the black money in the world, right? The CIA was in the inner city with crack cocaine because they were taking the culture into a debased state. So we have two halves to the problem. One is everything that you've been saying, all of the wrong ideas about entitlement that are being given to the African American and minority communities in America. But on the other half of that, you have the deliberate destruction of the culture. Because there's no question in my mind that the Great Society programs were designed to bring about what they did, right? Mm-hmm. Which is Black family. Black family creation had been on the uptick since World War II. You insert the Great Society, welfare checks for single mom idea, and look, it starts heading in the wrong direction. Then you add to that outsourcing jobs in America. That's a great idea, right? Mm-hmm. That's going to negatively affect predominantly inner city people. And then you throw in some crack cocaine. Well, heck, the next thing you know, you've got the inner cities look like a World War I war zones, and the word father is being replaced by baby daddy.
Yep.
So So we are suffering everywhere.
But it wasn't white middle class Americans that did that.
Of course not. Of course not. They were the one hope for the African American community. They should have copied us because we were being successful, you know, within our own culture. Like I've said, when I was a little kid and I was taken by my dad to Watts pre-riot, I thought that, and I am right, this was a culture that was different, way different, totally different, separate than the white middle class around it. But it was on the uptick, and it's easy to imagine that that community could have got into a very middle class, and by that I mean successful, autonomous political control, low levels of violence, upticks in education. Everything would have been better going forward. And yet none of that took place, even though there was momentum for all of that. And instead you end up now where you can't even drive through the area. It's literally now the fentanyl brigades have taken
the
world.
But at that time there was enough social capital, although not as much as like in the overall white community, but to build something up. But that was ruined with the cult of integration and the cult of victimology, because that demoralize the society, the imposition of immorality, through pop culture and the sexual revolution was devastating. But back then, the public morality was such that people conformed to the.
Yeah, and it's the cultural Marxism. I mean, they implemented the culture of critique where everything about European culture was bad. Mm-hmm. Because it was racist. So therefore, every other aspect of it has to be also negated. And this was just basically what this was, is just supersession. Mm-hmm. This was just the imposition of the kind of culture that the cultural Marxists had in mind to replace heritage European Christian mm-hmm. culture.
Yeah? But a lot of this upon affirmative action, I think a lot of it is ethnic warfare. And so it's just that they know by lowering these standards, you're harming heritage America, and you're harming Asian Americans and whites and all that. I do kind of find it kind of funny that conservatives will argue some affirmative action if it's hurting Asians and not white people, because white people can't defend themselves, but they have to use Asians as proxies. But the idea, again, the presumption of these things that we need to equalize these things. Well, no, if you believe in freedom and a diverse society, you're not going to have a achievement all across the board in all fields. You're going to have groups going to be very different. No one complains about the NBA being 80% black or the NFL being 75% black, you know, or minorities being overrepresented in Major League Baseball relative to the country's population. Well, that's normal because it's sports. Or no one complains that there's more black jazz musicians than Asian musicians, or that there's aren't any famous Asian composers. They play it, but they don't compose it well. How come it's most of them are German and these things? There's inequality across the board, but I think society still benefits from inequality because it's basically a division of labor. Then you can trade these things. But this cult of forced integration and this idea of equality destroys standards and destroys civilization, we're seeing today, because you're not going to have, and there's the idea that different ethnic groups might have an interest in staying separate or creating boundaries. That's another thing, that maybe ethnic whites have a good reason not to want to live around black people, and vice versa for that matter. So no judges decide they need to bus everybody together. Let's do away with these things. And let's just make new law. Let's read into the Constitution to get what we want, and to hell with it. To hell with what the law says, what their laws. We want this done. So we think it's good that schools are forcefully integrated. Not only are they integrated, it's good that you bus kids 2 hours a day, 3 hours a day, so they can throw people together. Of course, these people's children, the judges and the bureaucrats making the decisions, their children are never subjected to the consequences of these decisions. There's always someone else's kids who are being treated as guinea pigs. And it's been a wholesale disaster. It hasn't gotten equality, nor has it created racial harmony. It's made it worse. It's proof's in the pudding, but they want it. Yeah, again, they want it. I mean, moving on, did you see that Michigan House passes a bill that could make it using a wrong pronoun a felony, fineable to $10,000? Does that mean if a tranny claims that he is a she or vice versa, they can go to jail? No, it's if you don't, basically, if you're confronted with a transgender person and they demand to be identified as the opposite sex or whatever, and you don't do that, you can go to jail. Recently passed bill in Michigan could make it a felony to intimidate someone by intentionally using the wrong gender pronouns, according to some legal experts. Michigan State House Representative passed the bill, HB 4474, piece of legislation that criminalizes using someone, causing someone to feel threatened by words. Of course, this is nonsense. Intimidate, basically the law says intimidate means a willful course of conduct involved repeated or continuing harassment over another individual that would cause a reasonable individual to feel terrorized, frightened or threatened, and that actually causes the victim to feel terrorized, frightened or threatened. The bill reads. So it's basically how someone feels.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. Imagine in a court of law trying to prove that the intimidation did not occur. I mean, you're talking about an event inside someone's mind.
Yeah.
I mean, how could you either be sure you caused it or be sure that it didn't happen? This is just
disagreeing with someone is intimidating them.
Yeah.
Not submitting to their corruption of the language and of objective truth is intimidating somebody. Obviously, this is not going to stand constitutional muster, but it says something that, you know, the people that control the Michigan legislature, Democrats took over last year, I think. They think they can sign this law. I think last year they passed a law that was that banned reparative therapy for homosexuals. They're calling it dangerous. So it's dangerous to put someone under therapy to convince them to act sexually normal and moral and in accordance with their biology, but it's not dangerous to mutilate someone, aka gender-affirming care, sex reassignment surgery, to mutilate their genitals or cut off their breasts. That's not dangerous, but it's dangerous to submit someone to a therapy session where they try to convince the person that what they're doing is immoral and unnatural and they should behave more responsibly. That's considered dangerous, you know.
Yeah, I mean, this is just an intellectual dictatorship, which I really don't think will have a lot of effect. I mean, just in terms of how society is responding to this top-down intimidation and mind brainwashing, basically. I mean, look at the Bud Light response, which was unorganized and just, a kind of natural response to using a transgender person to sell beer. They're down almost 30% of sales, and it's not going to come back. I mean, I think that the brand is basically dead. I think that the tide is turning on the sort of the acceptance of the transgender agenda. I think that the kind of mainstream culture is beginning to understand how dangerous this is and how destructive it can be. And so, you're starting to have like an economic response to it. Hopefully there'll be a political response shortly. But the important thing about it, to my mind, is just that it exposes the secret society that runs the government, because the transgender agenda, sort of like the, vaccine mandates, is so ham-handed that clear-minded people that were sort of on the fence of skepticism will tip in the direction of clarity. You know, they'll start to realize, wait a second, there's something wrong, something hidden inside our political elite.
You're saying is even stupid people are going to notice?
I don't think stupid people. I think that you're going to have a resegregation of America. But I think that the people who are on the fence, and there are a lot of people on the fence, the different bizarre sort of things. I mean, certainly the lockdowns and the mandates, I think that produced some skepticism. But then when you look at the top-down transgender insertion right into our culture, I think this is, it's going to be diminishing returns. I think rather than bringing about a kind of intimidated and brainwashed population that just accepts, normalizes, hormone blockers for children, I think you're going to get more, active political energy against this stuff, and it'll accelerate the revelation of the truth about our political class.
I can be on the fence when you watch Rachel Levine, aka Richard Levine, talking, and it's obviously absurd. This is obviously a guy and he's trying to affect a voice. It's obviously a man talking to you. Or I can be on the fence when you watch a gay pride parade and they're all chanting, "We're here, we're queer, and are coming for your children." And then NBC News reports, "Oh, this isn't." They've always been saying this. It's a traditional claim.
How can you be on the fence when, like, Fallon Fox, you know, he's a powerful male who claims to that he suddenly had an epiphany and he sees himself as a woman. He's a mixed martial art fighter. And in one of the fights, he broke the skulls of his female opponent.
Yes.
And then named by Fox as the he was named by the Pioneer Triumph of like some sporting organization as the bravest athlete ever. How can you be in the fence about that?
Well, it's just the bravest athlete ever.
Bravest. He was given an award. So the thing
that's
is,
like, just like Joe Biden saying these are some of the finest brave people I've ever met in our history. There are these transgender.
Just remember that the vast majority of Americans realize that you can't have transgender, athletics, right? So this is diminishing returns. We have to do is just keep pushing for a political response. It isn't enough to just stop drinking light beer. You've got to make sure that that we have as a like they talk about a national discussion. That will never happen from the media. The media will never actually produce a legitimate national discussion. The purpose of the media, our media, is to prevent a national discussion.
Of course,
what we need to do is to just use the independent media, what we can control, to make sure that everyone is aware of the malevolence, the top-down malevolence, right, that the transgender agenda is exposing.
It is interesting that these liberal states like California and Michigan are passing explicit laws banning reparative therapy. To me, that proves its effectiveness and success in repairing people's behavior. And at the same time, they're like out in California, the guy Scott Wiener, that creep, proposing a law that would make it if you don't agree to gender affirming care for your child, that's grounds for child protective service to take your kid away from you.
Sure.
First of all, why are you banning a law against therapy? Presumably these are for minors or adults that willingly submit to it and they acknowledge their behavior is unhealthy and unnatural. And there might be an issue of trauma in your life or disorientation that can be addressed with therapy, discuss moral, you discuss philosophy, morality, and also your history and correct someone's behavior. No, that has to be banned. But what we're going to allow is for 10-year-olds that go into hormone therapy and get their genitals cut off, or their pubescent girls get their breasts cut off because they express some sort of confusion that's encouraged by the school system, which is now openly promoting transgender theory, which has no scientific basis whatsoever, or logic for that matter.
I mean, this is a top-down insertion of a destructive force into culture for the purpose of damaging it. Mm-hmm. There's no other way that this can be understood. That's what is occurring. That this isn't like the emergence of some secret transgender community that had been hidden and is now coming out of the closet. I mean, this is just preposterous, right? That idea. So this is a top-down insertion of an artificial human perspective for the purpose of damaging society. It makes, the ultimate goal of this is to destroy the kind of classic nuclear family that can promote ethnic groups and large politically organized, stable middle-class areas of all.
Well, that's, by a certain group identifies that as fascism.
Well, yeah, and also they identify it as threatening, because what happens then is that group is able to like put in political representation, right?
And well, from a standpoint of like a hard knuckle ethnic interest, it is threatening, but a well balanced political system will balance those interests and negotiate and give and take, and that's something they don't tolerate.
If you're waging ethnic warfare, everything that strengthens the ethnicity that are your opponents is threatening. And has to be, if in the process of warfare, you have to try to always break that down, the things which strengthen the opponents, and insert that which weakens them. That's how ethnic warfare is waged.
Yeah, and the hidden grammar of American history is ethnic warfare, despite all the talk about, you know, Declaration of Independence and rights and all that.
I mean, it's always been in play, and then you get into The Secret.
Did you see that thing in Boston? Was it in Boston where they had pride, all the pride nonsense in the schools, and the kids revolted? I think it was in Massachusetts. The kids tore down the posters. They wore t-shirts that said my pronouns are USA or something. I'm an American, and they tore down the, and the school board and the administrators are acting horrified, saying why this was out of control. And they had some school administrator go, "This behavior starts at home." I was like, "You damn right it does. That's the point, you moron."
Right.
It starts at home. Where it should start, you creep.
Right. But you see, that's just an amazing statement, because
it starts at home.
It shows the degree that the influence that parents have on children is threatening to them.
To them, exactly. Yeah, I know.
That statement is just absolutely, you know, clarifying.
Well, one thing I found was, and this is the problem with parents, like one lady was talking about her daughter, why she didn't want to participate. And in fact, even being asked to participate, and the school says this wasn't required. The fact that you're promoting it is coercion. The institution's promoting, and that's intimidating in and of itself. So spare me that. But there's like a 10-year-old girl who didn't want to participate in it, and the mother's saying, "My 10-year-old girl is straight." Well, first of all, no one talks about prepubescent people being straight or not straight. She's a 10-year-old girl. And when a 10-year-old girl has normal aspirations, whether getting married and having children, she's not being groomed. She's being raised normally. It's healthy. Okay. They're not grooming. So don't use that language.
Straight isn't a choice, you know, that you
it's
just
what it out. Is. It's nature. Yeah. And so, why are you sexualizing a 10-year-old girl? Because they're reacting. You know, this is the sort of the corrosive nature. And so the evil genius behind it is when you inject an issue like this into society, like transgenders, homosexuality, you immediately are forced in defense of sexualizing kids, because you have to articulate a position why this is wrong. This kid is, you know, they're not even sexual yet, but they know what the difference between boy and girl. Like when little girl plays with a doll, okay, and boys play with a toy truck. That's the sex differences is there, and that they're not being groomed. That's just natural. And the whole point of it is that the lady in defense, and then of course she comes out and says, "I have nothing against gay people." Okay, I know why she's saying that, because she has no social backing. If she says something otherwise, her life will probably be ruined. She probably does have something against gay people. Most people do. They're offended by it. And they really have something against gay people when gay people organize and they start imposing it, you know, and that's the problem. When it was a demimonde society, when they were just, you know, out there and they were on the margins, no one really was forced to think about it. Now they're active and they're organized, they're imposing their agenda. And again, it's success. At first, it's gay rights, then it's transgender rights, and then next thing coming down the pike is minor attracted person rights, which is now being openly promoted. So yes, you do have something. You just don't want to say it. And the fact that you have to sexualize your kid and explaining why she shouldn't be forced to promote sodomy in her local elementary or junior high school, you know,
it's the genius of the cultural Marxists. When they attack, they use your own values stated in some other place to attack particular, you know, like racial segregation. They attack this fact, and then they force you to defend it. And then they will bring your own principles, you know, to show that, well, you're in contradiction.
Not that there's anything wrong with it. You know, it's almost like...
The idea that there would be some, you know, aspect of human behavior which is universally good in every single instance.
Yeah.
They don't talk about the proportionality of effect. They just talk about the fact that there could be.
Well, how about that? You have to have a disclaimer. I'm not a bigot just because you don't want your kid being used as a totem for supporting sodomy.
Right. I'm not a Holocaust denier because I want to like talk about what happened at the end of World War II. You know, they have these like intellectual structures which give them the advantage in almost every sort of argument that can take place within the confines of our media and culture at the present moment, which is why I would recommend simply the process that is going forward to continue, which is basically the country is being resegregated. I mean, people are moving out of the inner cities like mm-hmm. Seattle or Portland or Philadelphia, and they're moving into areas that are places that the heritage, European culture can have some political representation. And homeschooling is a great example of this. I think that, it's like we've talked about the bifurcation that occurs from the vaccinated and unvaccinated. These things are all kind of cutting along a more or less, uniform political fissure. They're all kind of, people are falling into one of the two camps. I think that the unvaccinated would be overwhelmingly kind of overrepresented in the homeschooling environment. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. Everyone who is thinking clearly is moving in the right direction. And where this ends up is with kind of a new sort of segregation, which is kind of an intellectual and political one. Probably quite a bit racial as well, but not necessarily as the prime driver of the whole thing. What's really happening is people realize that there's just, like the lady in the who was saying, my 10-year-old is straight. I mean, her mind is intimidated. Mm-hmm. And the culture that she's in that school board, she can never be a free and, self-actualized, to use an expression, kind of person. She's got to get out of that. That system is set up as as an intellectual gulag, and you cannot, function inside of it unless you're prepared to come in with actual guns blazing, so to speak, to use a term, and just don't care about the consequences. And then you can be, powerful and have at them, but you're never going to change anybody who's in that world. They're the vaccinated too, mm-hmm. And so what you have to do is separate from it. Get out of that situation. Get out of that. Woman should just turn around, realize, look, I can't talk to these people. Get her kid and move. Move someplace where there are enough people who are strong to the extent that they can actually talk about, how to actually raise children in the heritage way and feel good about it. And in that world, you can make discussion. The world that she's in, it just isn't going to work. So she has to get out and resegregate, find some community that she can actually exist in. And this is what this process is going on everywhere. Now, in some places, like in France today, it needs to take place, but on a large scale, how the political kind of machinations will twist and turn to be able to bring that about are not clear to me. But one thing for sure is, if you're a French person, or you're in the same boat really as that woman is, same boat, it's the same slave ship, and you have to find a way to, since I don't know how the political process in France is actually working, I wouldn't really have any advice in there. But for the woman, I would say, man, get out. I've had friends who've left Seattle, they moved into communities in the state of Washington, but these are heritage American communities. And they're very comfortable, they can talk normally, they can have power in the school boards. There are these communities, and they're really where people should head to. We need to reconstitute our psychological strength, inside these heritage American communities.
Well, here we are. We're about to celebrate the 4th of July. This was America's Independence Day. Look at the current political crisis, the culture war, the engulfing insanity that's being promoted by all the higher institutions. We have to ask ourselves, what are we really celebrating at this point? For many, the 4th of July is just a summer holiday, a chance to go out and eat and drink and meet friends, which is not in itself bad. Set off a few fireworks. But Americans have to recollect, what's the significance of this day. Most people understand this is, we declared our independence from Great Britain. This was in the Declaration of Independence, of course, which claimed to derive its authority from what they call, the author, supposedly Thomas Jefferson, claimed were self-evident. But the question is, you look around us, do we still believe in them, at least as a people? Do we still believe, as the Declaration of Independence maintains, that nature, including human nature, you know, is accessible to all humans, to human reason, that it's these are all aspirations applying to all humans around the world? We're saying that may not be the case. As America becomes more diverse, these principles, these ideas are less popular and less respected. For the founders, the Constitution, of course, this Constitution was created a decade or so after the Declaration of Independence was declared, 1787. It was ratified by 1791, was designed to provide a framework for the kind of government that the Declaration of Independence envisioned, a republic or a commonwealth intended to protect the natural rights of its citizens. The Declaration of Independence, you know, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of earth the separate and equal station to which laws of nature and nature's God entitle them, a decent respect for the opinions of mankind requires that it should declare the causes which impel them to separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by the Creator with certain inalienable rights. Among those are life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right to the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute a new government, laying its foundations on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. That's an important point. And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while the evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right and duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. And in the Constitution,
I would just say, Tim, that, you know, the question, of course, is like.
By the way, that's the it wasn't me. That's the Declaration of Independence. So.
Oh yeah,
that wasn't off the top of my head.
Okay. Reminded, I like that. But, you know, that we should have that as like that should be widely circulated. That's such a clear-minded idea. But the key phrases there is that you know, whenever, you know, like any form of government becomes destructive, it is the right of the people to abolish it. It's the right, right?
Isn't that an insurrection?
Well, yeah, that is exactly what it is. So the question is how would you define, you know, like destructive of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Now, here's my question, Tim. If you're a parent and your 10-year-old who's a boy, mentioned in a public school class that, gee, you know, I think it'd be great to be a girl, be fun. And then they decided to introduce the child to a school psychologist who said, you know, we have to begin immediate hormone therapy on this mm-hmm. individual. And you resisted that, and they arrested you, right? Under these new laws of, you know, the Middle East, perhaps not applicable at the moment, but certainly we're heading this direction. Wouldn't that be kind of one of the things that government could do that would be, you know, under the category of destructive to life and liberty, you see? So now you're, you know, here it is. This is like literally the existential question, you know.
Yeah, is preventing your kid from being mutilated, right, or from being poisoned, right, or being molested by a school official or government official, is that a light and transient cause?
Yeah. See, so there it is. I mean, it's that serious, which is why, you have the idea of insurrection, which I think is not something that can be supported, you know, violent insurrection, but you certainly have the idea of resegregation, of saying, you know, this local sovereign, which is under the influence of this perversion, has to be avoided. And if you leave, then, and enough people do this and you resegregate, what is left, what is inside the institution, is just the woke, vaccinated individuals, to use an expression, right? Okay, so that group has no future. This is not really a generative group. If you look at the statistics on, well, the transgender community or the gay community or the politically correct feminist community, there's no children coming forward. They have this group has just one generation of existence. It is that kind of removed from the normal biological processes. So it only has this one generation unless it can get at the children of the generative, you know, biologically healthy group. So if you just resegregate, you can literally wait them out. I mean, that can be a legitimate strategy of saying, you know, let them have the public schools, let them have the buildings inside Chicago or Philadelphia. There's just, you know, that these groups can never produce another generation. They just can't. So move to an area that has the capacity to actually produce a biologically healthy subsequent generation. You see, that it's really that simple. You just move and let them die of old age, because the woke generation cannot produce children, just can't. So that's one strategy that I can put on the table. It's something people can try, you know.
Well, as we reflect upon again our anniversary or supposed independence from the British Empire and the creation of the United States, one of the founding fathers, John Adams, who supposedly talked to Thomas Jefferson in writing the Declaration of Independence, legend has it, he said that our Constitution was made for only a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other, meaning that the people themselves have to be moral and self-governing in order for the government to be able to be governed properly. I think it's self-evident if you think about it, but we live in a society where the institutions of government, of corporations, of entertainment are dedicated to moral subversion, promoting immorality, promoting vice over virtue, irrationality over reason, the unnatural over nature, and also fantasy over reality. So it's simply not sustainable anymore, given who's in charge right now, how they would worm their way in their power. The Constitution, the preamble reads, "We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, to ordain or establish the Constitution of the United States." What is our posterity? Our posterity is our children. If you're flooding the country, intentionally flooding the country from non-citizens, illegal immigrants, to overwhelm the existing native population for some sort of social engineering, dystopian, transhumanist agenda, you are destroying our posterity. And that's who's in charge right now. And we have to, as we celebrate 1776, we have to realize that now that system is dead. Our country, the American United States of America, for better or for worse, whatever it was, no longer really exists anymore. And there's been a revolution, a coup, if you will. Oh, it's more of a gradual revolution over the past, it can take many forms. You can look at the, obviously, the original order. Pre-Civil War country was very different than what after the Civil War, Lincoln's War, you had a consolidation nation state. And then you had sort of the managerial revolution that we experienced with the First World War, the Great Depression, the Second World War, and you have post-war America, which is Imperial America. But then you had the Civil Rights Revolution, and then you had the ascendancy of the Jews over the WASP elite in the United States, and starting in the 1960s, but really, I think, being completed in the 1990s, and we're seeing it now. And now, we talked about a couple weeks about the Quiet Jewish Revolution. I think I read that quote about what occurred. There's been a quiet revolution in the country where the Jewish elite have supplanted the WASP elite. And this is a function of demographic. It's a graphics. It's a function of, I think, of a consolidation of power, both in the media and finance. They've been able to sort of become they've graduated from junior partner to the primary partner in this relationship, and they're in control. And a lot of the things that we talk about, these destructive social causes, whether it's transgenderism, gay rights, feminism, abortion, unrestricted immigration. These things are being spearheaded by this Jewish elite, which evidently are in control of our government and most of the governments in the West. If you look at the legislation that's being passed, the imposition of hate crimes, what are we allowed to talk about and discuss, the narrative control. You know, as the old saying goes, it's been, as I think, attributed to many people, but it's if you want to find out who rules over you, just look at who you're not allowed to criticize. And so the regime of 1776 has been supplanted, you call it Zionist occupational government, or it's a regime, largely Jewish oligarchical regime, which now is trying, I think, put the coffin nails in what remains, what remains of the American Republic. At least it's vestigial ideals and institutions and procedures.
Yeah, the role that Freemasonry has played is also important, and it's been hidden even better than the kind of ways that Jewish ethnic warfare is kind of waged under in a way that is hard to understand or to see. They don't often make a declarative sentence about it, and in some instances, I think it's just sort of, kind of more natural.
Well, wasn't Freemasonry sort of baked in the American cake?
Yeah, always was. And yeah. See, but the fact is that it's secret. It has this secret aspect to it. And mm-hmm. That's really what I would think is the most important task that Americans need to do over the next 30 seconds, you have to try to understand what the secret is and what it has been, because George Washington got inaugurated wearing the Masonic apron. You have if you look at the wars, World War I, World War II, you have not just Freemasonry but the other secret societies, things like Bohemian Grove, Skull and Bones. So America has been not a matured democracy. It hasn't really ever gotten to the point where democracy, in my opinion, was really in a kind of a form that was really had a solid future. What was unlikely to be overturned, because the secret has not been disclosed, and yet it's certainly, Over all of the years of our nation's history, it has been the most powerful force. I mean, if you look at the role of Freemasonry in the Civil War, for example, right, or Skull and Bones in the Civil War, the secret societies, you can really see that group has, from which is a tiny little organization, particularly the high levels of it, has had this extraordinary power and has really been, I think, part and parcel of what now we're seeing as, a moral vert destruction of heritage European culture in America. And so that's kind of what I would say is the 4th of July, task, is just to really focus on what was the secret of Freemasonry. Why the secrecy? What is the secrecy for? What does it have as its goal? How has it affected us historically, and how it relates to the ascendancy of Jewish culture in America,
Jewish Freemasonry and Freemasonry have always been intertwined, and there's a Jewish.
That's the case. I mean, and so that's. But why? How does the inter? You see, this is the thing. Is that
well? Don't the principles of Freemasonry, at the very least, they promote liberalism, if you will, liberalism idea, of. Well, one thing is indifferentism with religion. You don't have like a
these are the overt, that's what the public is given for Freemasonry. But the fact is they have these secret oaths and secret levels. And, I would just say, if people are curious about my take on it, I wrote an article called Freemason and the Rye, which is a deconstruction of Salinger's, Catcher in the Rye. And I think there I show that, look, there is a violent purpose to Freemasonry. It's here to destroy. And that I think Salinger was making a kind of symbolic representation of.
Well, I mean, I know they, on a certain level, I guess the Porch Brethren will operate all types of charities and these things, but ultimately its doctrine is has contempt for charity, at least the Christian idea of charity.
Yeah.
And the worship of wealth and worldly gain and also technology. So there's even, you can find Freemasonic origins to even transhumanism, the ideas behind it, right? I mean, the idea you can gain man's apotheosis through technology.
Which yeah, is absolutely.
Transhumanism, yeah.
Really good point. Transhumanism, which is the future, is a Freemason project. And
but a lot of people, I wouldn't say that, like a lot of people look at today's, you know, lodges, and it kind of run down. Isn't quite as prominent as it used to be. And my response to that is that because Freemasonry, its principles are now the rule or the regime. They're the current dispensation, if you will. They've been kind of internalized in the liberal constitutions of the West. So I think there was a statement by the Duke of Orleans, and he said of Freemasonry, he says, Freemasonry is the candle. When the sun comes up, you no longer need lead. When the sun of revolution, how the Freemasonry rises, you no longer need the candle anymore, because that's
exactly. I mean, Freemasonry is just just like Skull and Bones and Bohemian Grove. It's just an organization that is used for a period of time. And then once its goal has been achieved, they can just pass it back to whoever's still inside the organization that doesn't know mm-hmm. the real reasons for its existence, and then move on. And which is what's happened. I mean, I think the where the secret is held at this point is inside places like the World Economic Forum and the CIA.
Well, you can say it when what's his name? You know, the guy, the Bond villain, World Economic Forum.
Oh, Klaus Schwab.
The Kraut. He talks about infiltrating governments using these organizations. You know, that's like a lodge system, if you will. And their
exactly.
agents, the model, same model for intelligence agencies and NGOs that are engaged in various color revolutions. They infiltrate and they have secret agreements or understandings with these powers, and they'll undermine society. And again, it's the principles, it's a technology for networking and technology for subversion and engaged in high level criminality without getting caught.
That's right.
You know, it's like the Illuminati, right? When you talk about Illuminati, I think, oh, it's a crazy conspiracy theory. And all this. Yeah, but the Illuminati did exist, and it was broken up, and its existence was exposed by some guy, a messenger, being struck by lightning or something in 1776. And so they did have designs, the idea of perfecting mankind. What was his name?
Adam Weishaupt,
who was I think his family were converts from Judaism, but he was raised as a Jesuit, or he's educated. Yeah. He wasn't a Jesuit. People say he was a Jesuit. He was educated as a Jesuit. So basically, right. The Jesuit principles were applied to his revolutionary doctrine, the same way that Freud applied the doctrines of the Jesuit methods to his psychoanalysis, and then the Scientologists applied the same principle. So these are techniques.
Yeah.
That are applied across the board. It's a strategy, you know, and
yeah, and it's something. It's possible to recognize them and to recognize that basically all of them are a kind of sophistry. They all, in back of them, have the secret. Mm-hmm. The secret. What is the secret? Well, I mean, it seems to me the destruction of Christianity and Europeans is the secret. That's what I would guess. And all of them are designed in a certain way to contribute to that process.
So organized Jewry would find Freemasonry very a useful tool.
You know, they would, but I mean, bear in mind, it's like
there's B'nai B'rith. That's Jewish Freemasonry, right?
Exactly. It is.
And you have to be Jewish to join B'nai B'rith. But Freemasonry doesn't exclude Jews.
No, of course not. But you know, the thing is that even Judaism and Jewishness is a kind of secrecy. It's like I don't think that the ordinary Jew in the street is privy to these ideas. He defends Judaism naturally because it's his ethnicity. But the secret is as manipulating to them. The people that I know who are friends of mine who are Jews, when I try to see to what level do they understand, I honestly don't believe that they, you know, have been given some kind of memo about all this. I think they're manipulated just like everyone else is by these different social.
Well, it's a question of degrees, right? Rings to rings. It's a question of
degrees, right? Yeah. So the thing is, the secret is the first step. You know, once one understands the secret, is to find out who exactly are involved in the implementation of it. What level of what number of people are involved in this? I mean, you look at like Gavin Newsom. Now, you know, he could be the next president of the United States, quite possible. I mean, it's not likely, but it certainly is. It's a reasonable possibility.
Well, if they want him to be, he will be.
Exactly.
Sorry.
If you look at this individual, you go, well, what is this? Where did he come from? Where did these ideas come from? So is he on the inside and has been, just been brought up in this world and just keeps it all secret? Or has it been manipulated? It's so hard to know, but this is the thing we have to get to the bottom of. We really have to understand this to make really good political decisions about our future. If we say we resegregate, say you get out to some little town in the Olympic Peninsula in Washington, you're out of Seattle, you no longer have the politically correct world on top of you, can think clearly. How do you protect yourself against the secret? How do you give the secret as an understanding to your children? How do you use your understanding of the secret to create a sustainable world for yourself? You know, so this is my hope is that, you know, all of these things are the ways we're being manipulated are kind of at, as I see it, we're at way into diminishing returns. They're creating more rebels than they are adherents. So it's time that the skeptic, the rebellious, the people who are saying no, the people who are seeing, you know, wait, heritage culture is better, got to organize among themselves, you know, and get to the bottom of what is in back of us, what is in back of the attack against us, you know.
Well, at this stage of the game, we've witnessed sort of this implosion of rule of law. And also the idea that the political class will maintain some sort of a public display of virtue and civic responsibility, with the crimes of the Biden family laid bare, the corruption of the Justice Department, the complete breakdown of the border, our liberal order, our parchment constitutions aren't securing anything for our posterity at this point.
No, we've lost control completely. Yeah. There's even lip service being given at this point. The Biden administration is a new ratcheting down into just hard-handed dictatorship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and at this point, again, it's kind of it's a tough times for civic nationalists. And I've cited the poll that talk about, you know, these the creeds and ideas that supposedly define America. That if you believe in these things, you're an American. It turns out the only people the group that really believes in the principles of traditional heritage America are ethnic European white Americans. Everyone else is kind of like, you take it or leave it, or we don't like it because it doesn't, it impedes our immediate access to benefits or access to the country. Because, and so it turns out that America, it's been called a proposition nation, but those propositions are only supported by a minority of the global population, which are ethnic European white European Americans.
Well, the thing is, you know, the country needs to,
but that's why they're flooding the country with non-white people. They know it. That's a cynical electoral strategy,
Well, it's also a cynical cultural strategy.
Yes,
they want the uneducated clump that requires 100% government substances in order to survive. That's where they're perfect control.
And then you're a racist if you point this out, if you notice it.
even though
they tell you they're doing it.
Right.
So, the great replacement.
So there it is, but. You know, so this 4th of July, there's a lot to be troubled by, but there's also, look at the progress we've made. Look at the progress the independent media has made in revealing the secret, so that going forward, more progress will be made. And, we're still standing, and I think we will still be standing a year from now.
One form or another, yes.
One form or another, yeah.
Right, happy, right. Happy birthday, America. Adios, America. So,
yeah.
Okay, Joe, enjoy the 4th.
Right, thank you so much. Happy 4th of July to you, sir.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.